Greetings, film freaks. We are the Podcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema.
What's poppin', people? Welcome to the Podcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in your earholes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
You only miss your toilet when you've had to cut some dirty spine in the disabled toilet of a McDonald's at lunchtime.
On today's episode, we will be talking about The Gray Man. This is a 2022 film directed by Anthony and Joe Russo and stars Ryan Gosling, Chris Evans and Ana de Armas. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows. When the CIA's most skilled operative accidentally uncovers dark agency secrets, a psychopathic former colleague puts a bounty on his head, setting off a global manhunt by international assassins. Here is an original song to support the synopsis.
Na, six, ya, tash, na. You can follow me, avoid you skillfully. Fight until I'm free, come on and you will see. Grey man, fresh trash, porn stash. Kill fan, fast cash, mismatch. Six, ya.
Let's start with some facts about the film. Chris Evans was originally considered for the lead role, but he declined it to play the villain.
Because he'd done Captain America and felt he needed a change.
I'm assuming that's the reason, yeah.
Of manly god hero-ness.
Yeah, go against the grain and play a villain.
Wearing boat shoes.
Would you have preferred the roles to be reversed and have Gosling as the villain and Chris Evans as the good guy? I know Evans is the archetypal good guy because of his turn as Captain America, but I put it to you that the film would have been better with Gosling as the baddie.
No.
You don't agree?
No. Gosling has a way of warming up his audience and cuddling them and making them want him to succeed in his love or assassination or putting a pen in someone's neck. I'd rather watch him as the lead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't bother to watch Chris Evans be good again. Be all stoic and heroic and...
It's done, isn't it? He's done it. We all know he can do
and
that.
And he's done it with the Russo brothers four times.
Yeah. I mean...
I wouldn't have had him at all. Not Chris
interesting.
Evans.
Interesting. So, who would you have had as this villainous porn stash?
James McAvoy.
Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah.
He could rock a tash.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Gosling would have been interesting to be the character that Chris Evans plays. I think he would have done a really good job with it. Because you've seen him in menacing roles before. In Drive, he's a bit of a menace, but he's effectively a good guy. Yeah. He does bad things, but for the right reasons.
I love him in Drive.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Ryan Gosling and Chris Evans were both encouraged to improvise their lines. Their first character face-to-face meeting was completely improvised.
Wasn't it a phone call?
Well, it says here, face-to-face meeting.
Okay. Is that when he gets inside the building, he's stuck in the cellar and the water's rising? That's their first face-to-face, isn't it?
No, I don't know. I'm going to be completely honest here, completely transparent. I remember very little about this film.
The conversation was quite minimal.
Well, yeah. And I only watched this yesterday, and I already... I'm struggling to remember parts. So the fact that their improvised face-to-face meeting is completely gone from my memory suggests that it wasn't that memorable.
Yeah. A month from now, you'll go, love that Mission Impossible film with Ryan Gosling. No, that Bourne film. No, that Bond film.
Yeah.
No, that action film.
Mate, I'm there 24 hours later. Like, I honestly am picking my brain to try and remember this film, but it feels... so generic that I remember nothing about it.
The best part of, say, action films in the last 10, 12 years is in there, isn't there? There's a fight on a plane that crashes, that's been done. Mission Impossible, there's the Bond sort of scenes in the nightclubs and the smart suits. It's just Gosling's amazing, though.
Yeah.
So charismatic, so beautiful. What a man. Like, yeah. To look at him and to watch him act. Oh, Guy gets me.
There's no doubt in Gosling's talent. And I think Evans is a talented actor as well. I think he's been painted with a brush that everyone now can only see him as Captain America.
What's he done outside of Captain America Fantastic Four?
Captain America 2.
No.
Avengers.
No, what's he done Avengers, outside of Marvel?
Well, I'm going to struggle here. He did a film a few years back where he was like a lawyer. For a pharmaceutical lawyer or something, that he was really good in that. I can't remember it for the life of me. So that's not great content for a podcast.
It's hard, isn't it, to remember anything he's done outside of
but
Marvel.
That, I don't think that's necessarily his fault, because the Marvel universe has become so big over the last 10, 15 years that anything other than that, it's hard to remember a time before Captain America.
All his other roles are quite supporting, quite gimmicky. Free Guy, yep. Knives Out. Yeah.
Oh, he was good in that. He was a villain in that as well.
And Ana de Armas is in that.
Yeah.
And Ana de Armas is in a film with Ryan Gosling as well. She's appeared in a film with both of them. Oh, what's the other one? Carry on about the... so we haven't seen him in anything outside of Marvel. I haven't, apart from these little supporting roles, which aren't huge.
It doesn't really support my fact when I say he's good outside of Marvel if I can't remember those roles. But I know there was one that I watched where I did think he was genuinely good.
Yeah.
But as I say, it's not great that I don't remember it. All I remember, it might be called Puncture. Puncture's come into my mind. I might have just made that up, though.
I moved on to Ana de Armas to see what film she did with him. I'm sure they were in a film together. Yes.
Gosling.
Gosling, sorry, yes.
Do we know the answer?
No. I can't find it.
I think this is a testament to how this episode's going to go, where we have branched off so
Blade Runner 2049.
There you go.
She's the hologram that he comes home to at the start. Beautiful hologram that makes him dinner.
Isn't she the one that's a huge building-sized hologram?
I think that's the marketing for her, yeah.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, I've so she's appeared that. In 2049 with Ryan Gosling and Mr. Evans in Knives Out.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Cool little fact.
Yeah.
Within the fact section.
Yeah. Hopefully it grows into other films, other genres.
Who's that?
Chris Evans.
This is going to be a struggle, isn't it? Okay, final
Chris
fact.
Chris Evans.
The movie's $200 million budget makes it, as of 2022, the most expensive Netflix original movie, tied with Red Notice. The Irishman was rumoured to have cost as much as $250 million, but sources reported its budget was $160 million. Now, I can tell you, without any bias, that this film did not deserve $200 million budget.
Well, say the script or plot didn't.
The special effects?
The location. Location shooting I'm a huge fan of.
Yeah,
I'm glad they actually went to Prague. I'm glad they actually went to Croatia to do it.
Yeah, there's a lot of globetrotting
in
the film. They've obviously got a big cast, and the big cast, you know, requires a big check balance. But for me, more on a film like this than The Irishman, where you'll get like titans of industry, a 3-hour slugfest of really gritty storytelling that spans through a lifetime. And then a film like this, which is just your throwaway action romp.
I'm hugely surprised, though, that Irishman even needed such a budget.
Well, think of all the de-aging. They had to get Bobby De Niro to look like 30.
I still refuse to believe that using some blue screen and some computer tech guys costs more than taking a whole film crew to Namibia in the Fury Road, or taking this film all the way to Prague. That's expensive, and you understand why. But just de-aging a guy on a computer, I mean, look what you can do on your phone nowadays. You can de-age yourself, you can age yourself.
It takes a bit more than an Instagram app to make me look like a baby. It takes more for them to make Bobby De Niro look 30.
It was obvious, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was highly obvious. He almost looked like he'd been sanded down.
Yeah.
And babied up.
Okay. Is there anything you liked about the film?
Just said it. Location shooting. I'm a big fan of that. Russo brothers, I think, believe that they'll never be invited back to Prague because they closed streets for bloody days. but I was happy to see my dear Prague. Just, for me, it's the greatest city in the world.
It's glorious, isn't it?
It's wonderful. It's condensed. There's this, a wonderful array of architecture and history and just these lovely little hidden sidebars, and the beer's wonderful. The culture's lovely. I love Prague, man. Any film where it touches Prague, I'm like, oh, look at Charles Bridge.
Yeah.
Oh, look at Malostrana.
Mm.
I love it.
Talk more about Prague.
Just like, I've been there 5 times.
Wow.
I've shot guns there.
Legally?
Yeah, I've baked a cake there.
Legally?
I've got baked there.
Legally?
Yeah.
Nice.
All legal.
Cool.
Not the getting baked part. That was a cool barman from the Hard Rock. Nice. Sorted me out.
Sweet.
I said, look, something very light and airy. I have a panicky disposition.
Did he deliver?
He did. It was beautiful. It was like grass-fed Yukon.
Kind bud.
I had the giggles under the Prague Castle.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. Quite a picture.
It's beautiful.
So was it just exclusively the location of Prague that you liked in this one, or was it all the other big cities that they go to throughout?
I do love it when they globetrot.
Yeah.
Be it Tenet or Mission Impossible or this, but when it says like in big writing Bangkok, you know, or they're Turkey and stuff, I'm like, oh, it's like the old Jones when you see his plane travel from country to country when he's traveling in the old Indiana Jones thing. It adds a sense of adventure.
Yeah.
Love it.
Nice. What else did you like?
I liked that it's not set in the Marvel Universe.
That's a win.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was close. It could have happened.
It's got the budget of a Marvel film.
No one ever knows. Russo Brothers involved. Chris Evans involved. I was waiting for someone to put a cape on. And because sometimes I get stung sometimes. When I saw Guardians of the Galaxy, I thought, what is this wicked space opera? I've never even heard of this. Watching it, loving it. I was like, oh, that was such a great rock rolling ride. And then someone went, yeah, it's part of Marvel.
So did knowing that it's associated with Marvel lessen the fact that you really enjoyed it before you knew it was Marvel?
What, Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah.
Yes.
Huh. So yeah. Just by association.
When I thought it was a standalone, let's make a really fun space film with a mega soundtrack, I thought, this is brilliant. I had no idea Guardians of the Galaxy was even related to Marvel. This is before I sat in lockdown and did all 22-23 films of the Infinity Saga. So you remember, I hadn't even watched them.
Yeah.
So I caught Guardians on a one-off. Just thought it was this mega, like, I thought it was his own franchise. Like, see, a new Star Wars or something.
I mean, I think it lives...
Idiot. I'm an idiot.
No, I think it lives in its own terrain within the Marvel Universe. And I know later on in that saga, they do connect it to other members of the Avengers and all of that. But I think there is an argument to be had that you can enjoy the Galaxy films in a separate plane from the rest of the Avengers films because they feel so different.
I feel that's like having a friend whose friend is Hitler. Do I still want to associate with this friend? Even though I have a great time with him and we go out drinking, maybe next week he'll be going out with Hitler.
I feel it's a bit unfair to compare the Marvel Universe to Adolf Hitler, personally.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a bit of a stretch.
Well, it's
but I understand what you're saying.
He brainwashed people.
And so Marvel's the new...
He lunchboxed people.
Marvel's the new Hitler?
I can't say that.
You effectively...
I know, I can insinuate, I can't say that.
Okay. Anything else you liked about the film?
Oh, it was nice to see Robert Kaczynski with a small role in the film. You might have known him as... I think it was Sean Slater in EastEnders. So he was a British TV actor, and it's a poison chalice, isn't it? If you do British soap acting...
Yeah, it's
you're never
going to
see this. You'll never see a film. More than likely, you'll never see a Hollywood film. But this guy had the role for Filly or Killy in the Hobbit trilogy. And when I found out, like, this young actor from EastEnders had managed to break away from soaps, and he was going to be in the Hobbit, but he ended up getting really ill on the Hobbit, some personal health, mental problem.
Oh no!
And then he got sent home, and he lost the role in the Hobbit.
Oh, that's
and
sad.
I felt so sorry for him because I thought, oh man, right on the precipice of his career.
Yeah.
And he lost it. And then I saw him in this film and I was like, oh, mad.
Who did he play in this film? Did he have a name?
He gets hung by the parachute. So, you know, when he jumps out the plane. Oh, lovely. You know, Rick.
I tell you what, it's like my brain's become a sieve. I watched it 24 hours ago and I remember nothing.
Yeah, but that's because it's lost. It's a crouton in a soup of shit. So
a pouton
doesn't mean it's not enjoyable soup, but it's a pouton, and there's other poutons flying around in that soup,
yeah.
And you don't know which one you've eaten.
Exactly.
You have no idea.
I don't even recall someone got hung by a parachute, and that's something I feel like I should remember.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you about that Chris Hemsworth one that came out recently. It was an action one. He saves a boy or something at Extraction or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, another one just totally lost in the...
I've watched that.
Ether.
I've watched that. I can't remember that.
No, yeah.
No.
Exactly.
Maybe I've got a weird blind spot for these sort of films where I watch it and I sit there going, thinking I enjoy it. And then afterwards, I'm like, oh, I don't remember.
But they want it to be a franchise, this, don't they? Ryan Gosling's never done a sequel to any film he has ever done. Ever. So he wants to now... He's interested in this becoming a franchise. Like his Bourne or his Bond.
The thing is, the power in front of the camera and the power behind the camera and the budget and how well this one has undoubtedly done with the general public, I can totally see this being franchised. He's a great leading man. Chris Evans as well, even though I remember nothing he's in. Like, I remember nothing about this film. Like, he's got a huge fan base as well.
He's got tiny roles outside of Marvel. I think that's fair to say.
Well, yeah, I think so.
He's rarely a
lead nothing
man.
That springs to mind.
No.
There is
I love it. We're back to that. It's like, wait.
Yeah, because it feels...
Sorry, Chris.
It feels like there should be something to back up my argument for Chris Evans, but I'm literally drawing blanks here. Like, I can't think of any.
Just go with the small, funny cameos that we spoke about.
Yeah, Knives Out. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah,
fine.
So, the things I liked...
Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, he was great in that.
Yeah. Come on, man. Yeah, let's go for a beer.
That was another side character. And that was before he's turned as Captain America, wasn't it?
Muscle Jock, again.
Yeah. Well, from what I can remember about the film, what I liked about it is the chemistry between Gosling and Evans. Although they don't actually spend too much time together on screen, I really enjoyed the way in which they bounced off each other. That resonated, I think.
I thought at one point they were going to bounce off each other.
Quite literally.
Mm.
Yeah?
Yeah. I've at one point in the film, I thought Evans actually might have been into him.
Romantically?
Yeah.
I could see it.
Yeah.
From what I remember.
I just thought, like, this weird, extremely well-dressed man has very bad, weird anger issues, and I just felt like he was either going to reveal that he was his brother or that he was going to move in for a kiss, because there was some comedy moments in it as well, and I started thinking, this film's... Like, when someone drops a grenade and Chris Evans go, oh, douche.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You never knew when it was going to get even more sillier.
Yeah. I think if he turned out to be a lover or a brother, I think that it may have been more memorable for me. I would have preferred to have seen that because, as I say, they weren't on screen too much together. When they were, I enjoyed it. And even their little phone conversations and stuff, the dynamic between these two superstars was enjoyable. Mm. I just wish there was a bit more of it, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also like the action. It's solid and gratifying fight scenes that are well choreographed and impressive in their scale. Particularly enjoyed the opening scene where there's a huge use of colour with fireworks during an assassination attempt.
New Year's Bangkok.
Yeah, that's probably the standout scene for me, and it was right at the start.
Mm-hmm.
So the film starts and it's vibrant, it's colourful, it's energetic, the music sounds great, it's fast-paced, action, all of this stuff. And from that opening scene, I was like, right, you've got my attention here. This looks like it could be a good one, yeah. This could be a winner.
I felt that.
And then it felt that energy and the way it looked and everything just couldn't keep at that level throughout.
Mm.
But I did enjoy that.
Yeah, I loved it when he decides to... So in the opening scenes, he's under two glass floors and he's using infrared to try and hit his target with a gun. And then he sees collateral, i.e. child.
Mm.
And then he decides to do it up close and personal. And there's a great bit where it's so, like you were saying, really vibrant, really loud. And he walks down the stairs and he just keeps picking up utensils and popping off guards in the neck and stuff. And it looks like Hitman, the game. You're just like, oh, yeah, it's getting good. Yeah.
But it never stays at that level, does it?
No, It's a quilt sewn together with cliches.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I like that. The final thing that I liked about the film was its star quality. Grey Man proves that a mediocre film can be enhanced by charismatic leads. Whilst the two leading men didn't necessarily save the film for me, I think it would have been a lot worse if those two weren't involved. I don't know if you agree. I know you're a big Gosling.
Can you imagine it?
Oh.
That's what I mean about Gosling's on-screen presence. And Chris Evans is great. He's entertaining. He looks really different from his usual roles. I mean, he's got this little porn tash going on.
Mm.
And he's dressed like a cross between Freddie Mercury and Groucho Marx.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
And so there's a nice, like you said, like the star quality definitely keeps this rolling, keeps it going. Absolutely.
Without that, I think this would have been abysmal. I really do. Ooh. I think that just watching this film... And being almost worn out by these sorts of films, you know, the plot's pretty straightforward. An assassin who knows too much is set on to be assassinated.
It's happened a lot.
You've seen it time and time again. And this globetrotting cat and mouse chase where you know at the end of the day, the good guy's going to win, the bad guy's going to lose. And sure, the action scenes are nice and it looks pretty and all of that. But I don't know about you with these sort of films. And I think my personal opinion is the main cause why I don't remember much of it is I just can't absorb it anymore. Mm. I've seen it too much. And yep. even though I almost find myself, well, you know, this is the highest budgeted Netflix film ever. It's got a huge cast. It's got great directors that have done amazing things. Every piece of me wanted to like this film, but every piece of me was like, no, fuck off. I don't want to see it. I've seen it before.
I made the mistake of looking at some reviews and getting a gauge of what the general, because sometimes it excites me. If I look at a review and it's like Rotten Tomatoes 70%, IMDb 7.5 or up, I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. But these were really low. Public liked it.
Yeah, of course they did.
The public liked it, but their critics didn't give it much love.
Yeah.
And then I was like, got to be a reason for this.
The problem is when the hype train pulls into the station, so many people will jump on that train without doing any work or giving it any extra thought. If you're told to love a film, a lot of people will be like, oh, this is the next new blockbuster. We should like this, watch it, I enjoy it. And I'm not slagging those people off. I think, you know, their opinion is just as necessary and as valid as the more dedicated cinephile. But my concern is that if mass audience is just happy to digest films like this time and time and time again, we're not going to see innovative films. They're all going to be this cookie cutter type of action blockbuster that does nothing.
Because it sells.
Yeah.
Yeah. Independent films is where you're usually going to get your Oscars, isn't it? And your more thought-provoking cinema or art. There is a place for blockbusters. Like, you know, we've had conversations on like Fury Road or Edge of Tomorrow.
Mm.
It's fresh. There's some world building in it. There's a bit of lore. It's more gripping because it's new.
Yeah.
Or it's refreshing.
Exactly. There is a world where crowd-pleasing blockbusters and interesting storylines with decent character arcs and plot development can coexist.
Mm-hmm.
Like you say, Fury Road's an example of that. The new Dune is an example of that. Yes, mm-hmm. you have to think a bit more. All of Christopher Nolan films is high in scale. And
Villeneuve.
Yeah. All of these huge directors can show that, you know, blockbusters can be intelligent as well. There mm-hmm. is a gap in the market for that. So taking that in consideration, when films like The Gray Man come out, it, for me, and like the recent Prey film on Disney Plus, it's another one of those.
Woof.
Yeah, it's just another one of those films that are like, I've been promised the world here. People seem to really like it, and I watch it, and I'm just yawn.
Mm-hmm. Problem with films like Prey, I mean, this isn't all films, obviously. Like we were saying, George Miller, what he did with Fury Road's great because he developed an idea and made it better. And Denis Villeneuve's Dune is, in my opinion, superior to the original. Mm-hmm. And I think anyone that argues with it is just because they've got
nostalgia
for the original.
Yeah.
When you can delve back into the past and turn out a better product, that's great. But the problem nowadays is it's oh, let's do a prequel to this, or let's do a spin-off to this or a side story. And it's always trying to catch up with that original hype, that original snowball that's now a boulder. It'll never get there.
Yeah, and I guess that's one thing The Gray Man has got going for it is an original concept, not original in what it sets out to do, but it's a brand new story with brand new characters. It's not an already established franchise. It's not a prequel. It's not a spin-off. It's not a reboot. It is its own entity. And for that, I guess in this current climate, you've got to give it kudos, right?
It will be a franchise.
Yeah, inevitable.
It's already gone way past its budget. I mean, sorry, profits have already, they're like 400 something million. And it cost $200 to make. I'm like, how have they accrued that?
Yeah, I guess...
Which is mad, because it's a Netflix original. But I was looking at it and I thought, that's mad.
I guess if you consider the amount of people that pay for the Netflix subscription and then watch that film through their subscription, the numbers are probably skyrocketing.
It's crazy.
Of course it would. Yeah, it's in your home. Mm-hmm. You don't have to make any effort to consume this content they've made.
Something like 88 million people have watched it already.
That's madness.
Yeah.
That's madness. And I wonder how much of that, it'd be interesting to know how much of the film would you have to watch for it to count as a viewing? Because you might not even have to watch the 2 hours of it. You could only watch 10 minutes and it counts as a viewing. Who knows?
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, can you tell me what you didn't like about the film?
We've covered a lot of it.
Yeah.
Cliche script.
Yeah.
Nothing new.
Yeah.
There was nothing new in this film.
No.
Just like you said, led by a really cool, charismatic cast. So that's what you're watching. But in terms of plot and everything, it's been done, man.
Yeah.
Spies, finding out about spies, killing off old spies, it's all been done.
Yeah.
I actually covered that as well. Chris Evans' character looked like an evil Freddie Mercury / Groucho Marx.
Yep, it's a great point. Well made.
I didn't like the mercenaries when they all got together in Prague to take out Gosling's character, because they were dressed like computer game characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they had all them weird skull Call of Duty masks on. I just imagined all these fucking little couch potatoes sitting there going, oh, with their spots and pot noodles, just like, oh, that's quality. Look at his mask. I'm going to go play Airsoft. Yeah. I was just like, oh.
It's Fortnite. It's Call of Duty. It's
I like my gritty. Yeah. I like my real. Spy World does not look like that.
It doesn't. No.
Spy World is like Bridge of Spies.
Yeah.
Ordinary looking people being very covert. But obviously this film wasn't selling that. It wasn't saying we're a really niche, tight suited spy film. We are crazy in your face.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Any other dislikes?
Really, I didn't think Billy Bob Thornton needed to be in it.
I felt sorry for him almost, man.
Yeah, it was kind of sad.
Like, because he normally plays these larger than life characters that have got a lot of meat to the character, like a lot to say, a lot to do. He's a real decent actor, and it just feels like he was there for the paycheck, and he had very little. Like, he's almost gone into those old man slippers where he's just like, oh, yeah. I used to be
the Liam Neeson master role.
Yeah,
where he's passed on his tricks and stuff to the... I didn't always live here in the mountains.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ragul.
Listen, he probably got a tidy paycheck at the end of it, so I'm sure he's not feeling too sorry for himself, but I think he's better than that.
Well, if
so
you feel sad, bang on Bad Santa and just have a rollicking laugh. Yeah,
that's when he's at his peak, right?
Can't you see I'm fucking eating? Love him.
So I could go on all day about what I didn't like about the film.
Oh.
Yeah. As I say, and I've hit this point a few times about me not remembering, what I do remember is these points that I really didn't like, so I might go in a bit hard. But top of the list, it's just generic. Straight up. Another film where the aim is to assassinate the assassin because he knows too much. Predictable plot development, lazy flashbacks and boring exposition all combined to make a cookie-cutter action film that felt unoriginal, uninspired and ultimately forgettable.
Oof, vanilla ice creamed them.
Yeah.
No sprinkles, no nuts.
No, just take it.
Just take this generic ice cream.
And again, I go into every film I watch wanting to enjoy it. Because I don't want to sit there and spend 2 hours of my life watching a film where I'm like, oh, this is shit.
Of course.
I don't get thrills out of watching disappointing trash like Sharknado or any of that shit. I like to watch a film that's got a pedigree behind it. And considering the cast, the crew, the budget, it should have been decent. And it was just the most bang average film I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was.
If I'm being honest.
To be honest, I would say the Mission Impossible films are much better. That I know that's a franchise, but this is aiming to be a franchise.
Yeah,
I find Bond way too pretentious, and especially the modern Bond, I can't get behind this whole
mate
really shit storyline, really like unbelievable things happen. I was just like, no.
I've got to be honest, the whole Bond franchise, any Bond film I've ever seen, I have thought of them all as being completely mediocre, bang average, right down the middle.
Yeah,
none of them I've watched and been like, oh, okay, now I'm a Bond fan. I've watched them out of almost fear of missing out, especially when Daniel Craig came back into it and he had huge hype surrounding him when he took on the 007 role.
But that was the modern liftoff, wasn't it, for the modern Bond?
Yeah, and I watched them all, and because of the hype surrounding it, every time a new Daniel Craig Bond film came out, everyone was like, that's the best one yet. Every time I'd watch it and I'd feel exactly the same as I felt watching a film like this, and I was just bored, and I just don't get the hype surrounding
it. Well, if he didn't love it, why should we?
Did he not love it?
No, I think he said he'd rather kill himself than do another Bond. He then sort of backtracked and just said he missed his family. It had been really hard. But just the physical and mental effort he had to put into it, and what I watch on the screen, I was like, you didn't need to put that effort into it, mate. It didn't land. It didn't hit me. It didn't land with me.
No, I'm exactly the same. And I do understand that James Bond has a huge, huge, loyal, fiercely loyal fan base. And I understand, and I don't hold it against anyone that loves Bond. Like, brilliant. If you're mad into a franchise and you obsess and you know all of it, you could go on Mastermind and smash out James Bond. Like, fine, power to you. But for me, if you're going to be an expert on something, do it about something that's better. The fucking Bond film, like you say, it's all the same film every time.
Well, the original, so when I say original, say the ones I grew up with, be on a Sunday and like family were watching it. I can see why they were entertaining at the time, because, you know, he'd have a car that could swim underwater, go underwater. He'd use toothpaste and it would have an explosive in it. It was gadgets that weren't gadgets. In the modern ones, it's the technology so high.
Yeah.
And it's no longer about being Bond. It lost its identity. If the way it's looking as well, they're going to keep trying to change its identity even more and more and more, changing up the whole 007 thing altogether. You know, I know they even proposed the thought of a woman doing it. I'm like, go and do it.
Yeah.
It probably might actually change my opinion of Bond.
Breathe some new life. Because
I feel bored to death by it.
Yeah, breathe some new life into the old dog. Like, give me a reason to watch it. Yeah. But I'd be interested to see after The Grey Man, so... sometimes, not often, sequels can be better than the original.
Oh.
And maybe if there is a Grey Man 2, I'll probably watch it because I'm a chump. Even though I'm sitting here speaking about this film like it's really affected me, like I really didn't like it. If next year Grey Man 2 is coming out, Ryan Gosling's the star, I'd sit there and watch it like an idiot, because of course I would.
Mm.
And there lies my problem. I'm too weak. Anyway.
No, it's good to watch and then formulate an opinion.
I think so.
But if you've been stung, you just don't go back.
Yeah, well, that's what I should do, but I know I won't.
When you go restaurant and you have lukewarm chili and it affects you and makes you ill, do you go back and order the lukewarm chill?
No, but if it was a year later and we're going to that place that had lukewarm chili con carne, a year's gone by, I'd go there and I'd be like, oh, maybe it's all right now. Maybe I almost trick myself to thinking, even though that in that instant it made me unwell, because there's a long time has passed, I'd go back and I'd be like, that's what would happen with Grey Man when the second one comes out. I'll look back on this and I'll be like, it wasn't bad. I'll watch it. It might get better. They'll probably have a nice new bit of casting with another actor that I love and I'll watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? It will probably be trash.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Other parts I didn't like about the film was dull dialogue. It was bland and offered no texture to the characters that were delivering it. Boring wordsmanship that felt better suited to a video game. So like you say, with side characters and the way they looked, the way they spoke as well, it felt like a cutscene on a computer game that you got to the next level and these are the enemies you have to get past. Cutscene, they have a little bit of dialogue, a little bit of... and then go through, kill the next group, and then you're in the next cutscene.
It was just like Uncharted. Like,
yeah, Gosling and Evans deserve better, and considering the film was directed by two directors that are responsible for one of the most successful films of all time, I just expected more.
Infinity War?
Yeah, Endgame. The Infinity Saga. So they did Infinity War and they did Endgame.
Oh, okay.
Both films I liked. Listen, I'm guilty of trashing The Grey Man and I'm guilty of trashing franchises, but this is coming from a person who does enjoy the Marvel Universe.
Mm-hmm.
So I do know that there's a place for these sorts of films, these crowd-pleasing blockbusters. I know there's a place and I enjoy them to a point. But at least with Marvel, I mean, it's the same dish dressed differently, isn't it, with Marvel, every film?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm a sucker and I do like them, I have to admit.
Yeah, but I like Alien, Aliens, and even Alien 3.
Yeah.
And some people would laugh at me for this.
Mm.
And that's what I'm more into that. I'm more into that really stark, depressing space and no hope. That's my franchise, I suppose. Like, I'm more into something along the lines, but look at how many have been made. So, I consider there's 3 Aliens films. 3. Yeah. Some people consider there's like 6 or 7 when you throw Aliens versus Predator in and Alien Resurrection.
Yeah.
So, you look at that as old, it's almost saying 9, 10 films.
Probably.
I'm only looking at 3 of them.
Yeah.
So, I'm just as guilty for loving them. I just, it's exhausting. MCU is exhausting.
Yeah.
I mean, I did the 22 or 23, I can't remember what it was, in 2 weeks. And I was glad I did it. They were all between a 5.5 and a 7, I think, or an 8. And but then the minute I heard what they have planned after the Endgame, and you called the film Endgame. And
spoiler alert, it's not the end of the game.
They've done almost half as much hours of MCU again.
Yeah.
Through series and through other films, some Netflix originals and stuff. And I'm just like, it's never going to end, man.
So it's important at this point that I sound like a hypocrite, because I'll sit here and I'll slag off franchises and I'll slag off films like The Grey Man or like Prey. And then I sit here and I say I really like Marvel.
Yeah, but you don't always fancy fish and chips.
That's true. And I like Marvel to a point. And what's happened with me, the end game finished and that's the end of that chapter, so to speak. And then the next phase continued. I've watched everything, TV and movie, that have come out post end game. And the dip in form is astonishing. Mm. Like, and for me, someone who loves the fact that there's a span of 22 films that all interconnect and all have little Easter eggs and relevancies to one another, love all of that. Got to this point in Marvel and I'm like, you're losing me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's almost common consensus from people now. It's gone too far. And like you say, the film ends with an end game and mm-hmm. they're bringing back characters that should have died off. And yeah, it becomes very laborious.
Mm.
Yeah. But
someone said once, and I totally agreed with him, it feels like there are no consequences in MCU universe. Because as much as everyone's like, yeah, but Iron Man did die. It's like, yeah.
He will probably come back, though.
Not maybe not him, but it took 22-something films, but throughout that, so many other characters died and come back.
Mm.
And it's so confusing. I think the way they play with space and time in almost everything nowadays, it's just a cop-out for shit storytelling and bad filmmaking. The fact that Captain America comes back as an old man at Endgame goes, I went and lived a different life. I'm like, that means you never existed, bruh, and the world didn't get saved because you were pivotal to almost every film. How are you now an old man and went and got laid and slept with the bird that you left in the 50s with her cobwebs, and now you're back, but you're old and like, yeah, I lived another life, Timmy. It's like, no.
He's quite passionately about that one.
Oh, I could go for hours.
The final thing, well, I say the final thing, my final dislike that I have written down is just its lack of personality. Despite the solid cast,
just shitting all over this film, man.
And Infinity Saga directors, the film felt flat. It's a carbon copy of pretty much every assassin film out there and trods along a well-beaten path without any detours. Looks good, feels average. I could have literally started the episode.
Death stare.
I could have started the episode today and gone, today we're talking about The Grey Man. And then I could have gone, looks good, feels average. Thank you for tuning in. I could have called it there.
That's great. I'd love it to be that short.
But yeah, man, that, I mean,
bite-sized reviews just for you.
Yeah. Just, yeah. And don't get me wrong, it's not awful. I can't sit here and go, I wasn't mildly entertained. There was a few times I went, or
you're a film lover though, so you'd, like you said, you go into it and you want to walk away with a new little nugget of love and knowledge in your brain.
Yeah.
And it was just a copy paste, wasn't it?
I think the older I get, the more I expect from my films. And so even a film like this where you're not necessarily going to be sitting there thinking, oh, I can't wait to really get into all the twists and turns of the journey they're going to take me on. You know, that's not this film.
You sound like you take a lunchbox to the cinema.
I have done.
And put your feet up with socks off.
That I will not do.
Mm-hmm.
I will eat a sandwich in the cinema within a packed lunch. If it's on a Tuesday afternoon and no one's in there, save myself a bit of money. I'm not paying £5.75 for a gluten-free sandwich in Odeon. Fuck off.
Jesus.
That's too much.
That is a lot, especially for a tasteless sandwich.
Yeah, putting extra charge on it because I can't eat wheat.
It's harsh. There should be NHS subsidies for the people of your kind.
Yeah, no Wheaties. Yeah, I've got some questions. Are you bothered? Do you want them?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, yes.
Yes. The Grey Man is Netflix's highest budgeted release to date. Do you think the film was worthy of such huge financial backing?
No.
Nor do I. I don't even bother offering more of a...
30 million.
You probably couldn't get both Gosling and Evans on board with 30 million.
Why not? They're already millionaires. They've already made it. If you love a project and you want to do a film, or is it just another reason for you just to tone your muscles?
It's
if you
just...
love it. What's wrong with $1 million? for doing something you just enjoy doing.
Because these are people that can get paid $50 million.
Well, what are you going to do with it? You haven't got the years to spend it unless you're an absolute fucktard. Okay. Charlie Sheen.
They might be fucktards.
Blowing it up your nose and smashing loads of birds.
They might be just really attractive fucktards, we don't know. But yeah, for me, I watched this film and I don't know the budget of making a film.
No.
I don't know what I'm talking shit. I don't know what I'm talking about. But
I would have said it was the world global movements and the action.
Yeah, moving the cast around the globe and these huge CGI and all that. Yeah, but yeah. I just when I hear it's the most expensive film, I'm like, you could have made a better film. If this was the most expensive budgeted Netflix film ever, you could have made something better. You could have made something at least memorable, surely. Because if I was an investor in Netflix, I'd be like, where's my fucking money going here?
Yeah.
What am I spending it on? How much is the lunches they're getting out there? What are the goodie bags they're getting? Because $300 million on a fucking film that's instantly forgettable,
mm-hmm.
I'm wound up.
That'd be a good name. Instantly forgettable.
Instantly forgettable, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was. The Grey Man had all the tools to be a decent film. Do you think the final product suffered by trying to appeal to the masses?
Yeah, I feel like they took the blueprints from what's successful of the last, say, 10 years, what's blowing cinemas, you know, profits. And I think they just took that and did it.
I think that's a great point. I reckon they got a focus group of armchair film fans in a room and was like, right, we're going to make the highest budgeted Netflix film ever. What do you like? Explosions. What else do you like? Fighting.
Michael Bay.
What else do you like? Infinity War. What mm-hmm. else do you like? Ryan Gosling.
Mm.
And this was just made based on what they said.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when money's on the table, people leave their passion and their morals at the door and just go and do a piece of shit film.
Yeah. God, we're really trampling on this one, huh?
Mm.
Final question. Do you think the general public will ever tire of these generic, star-studied and easily digestible light entertainment? Or do you think this type of cinema will continue to reign with its mediocre superiority?
Ugh. You have brought knives today.
I know.
Knives.
Yeah. I'm probably a little bit too anti this film, I think.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, it's sad that we live in a world... I'm going to cover it again. Sad we live in a world where something like Fury Road makes a loss against its budget.
Yeah.
And it's considered a masterpiece by some of the best critics in the world. Everyone that went and saw it considered a masterpiece. It's mad because this film's already well surpassed its hopes at profit, and that's insane.
And it speaks to the fact that if people are going to be happy consuming content like this, they're just going to keep making it.
Mm-hmm.
If they spent this money on this film and people, it got panned by critics and general audiences alike, then I think if these sorts of films started to get panned, like the new Marvel films are starting to get panned, I think people might have their head turned and they might be like, I can't be bothered with another one like this. I can't be fucked. And then that's how change happens. If so many people are disgruntled, eventually change will happen. But all the time people are watching films like this and going, oh yeah, it's good. It's never going to change.
Maybe it's always been like this, but I don't know of any film series, any franchise, apart from Bond, but Bond is anthology in a sense, isn't it? He never ages. You know, he's lived in the 60s and the noughties. So Bond's a bit different. It's like an anthology. It's a different tale every time by Fleming. Bond's probably the longest running one I've known of. But, you know, when you look at films like this, and is this today's Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, I suppose?
Yeah, that's a point I wanted to maybe make and ask you about. Do you think this is sort of a nod to the action films before superheroes got involved?
Well,
in a sense.
Problem is, though, they with something like Die Hard, let's say it was a trilogy, or Lethal Weapon, it was a trilogy, it only became a franchise 20 years later because some dick went, oh, let's do Die Hard again. Let's do Lethal Weapon. I think this is the first time in cinematic history that you can get something like MCU. It's just overload, content overload. And what does that do? The best things in life are an acquired taste, aren't they? Yeah. Content overload dilutes everything.
Yeah.
And it makes it hard to taste anything. So then you are looking for the good stuff rather than just enjoying the film. You're having to focus on what was good in it. Yeah. I know people that said to me they cried at Endgame. I was like, what? You cried? I went out and stabbed someone after that film. With my eyes.
Yes, thank you for clearing that up. No one was actually physically stabbed.
Cried at the end of Endgame.
I didn't. But I'm dead inside, so this doesn't really count. What would you rate The Grey Man out of 10?
5.
Same.
Egg.
Mate rate.
Egg.
That is perfect summary of the whole film, because we both given it 5 out of 10.
Yes.
Which gives it a total score of 10 out of 20, which is completely...
Did you just use a calculator?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you touched the table, sorry.
Yeah, no. And then you questioning that made me sort of think, wait, have I got 5 plus 5 right? I was like, shit. No, maths isn't my strong point, but yeah, I got that one right. But yeah, the fact that we've both scored this 5 out of 10, which gives The Grey Man a total score of 10 out of 20, is really all you need to know. It's the epitome of bang average for me.
Yeah, it was hard to talk about.
It was really hard. Because even films I greatly dislike, it's easy to get into what I really hate about it. And films I love, obviously, we can talk all day about the films we love. And as I say, this film isn't awful, but it's not good. It's not even good. It's just okay. It's not shit. It's not good. It's just okay.
An okay can suck, can't it?
Yeah.
It can suck.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you like your light entertainment with some action and
if you're in a rush,
if you want to kill 2 hours and got nothing better to do, but you want to be on your phone aimlessly scrolling while you're just consuming and absorbing
waiting
content,
for Love Island,
yeah, then The Grey Man's probably a film for you. Consider watching this one if you enjoyed Smoking Aces, Bullet Train and Kill Bill. Should we play a game?
Is my toilet blocked?
The game in question is What the Plot, where the rules are simple and the results quite the opposite. Harry will conceive an original idea from his big and beautiful brain and give birth to a plot. It is then down to me to nurture this thought by providing a film title, genre, cast, and anything else I can think of to raise this brainchild into a fully functioning film concept. Over to you, Harry.
I got Sydney and Winston. These are childhood friends.
Oh, their names?
Yeah, Sydney and Winston. Growing up in a bombed out London after World War II. World War II's over, but London's still just a heap of rubble. And they're kind of like street kids running around, looking in ruins and stuff. And then closer into like central London, they're playing around in a back alley outside a clothing store. And there's two mannequins, and both mannequins have a hat. And they take both these hats off, and they both wear a hat each. One's a fedora, and let's say one's a bowler hat. And they put them on. They're fascinated by these hats. And that's like the opening of the film. And it cuts to maybe 15, 20 years later, and these two guys have gone into business together for like weird and wonderful hats in their shop. They're fascinated by them. They're fascinated by what it means to it, like, social status. It's almost quite arty. It's very, they're very into it, and they've become very niche in that market. And one day a woman comes into the store, very old, rich socialite, with an odd sort of demeanour. And she's got this extremely unique hat. Extremely unique. So odd. They've never seen it. It's never been... No one's laid eyes on it before. And they take it in. And this hat becomes the catalyst for their friendship to become their downfall. So what happens is... Sydney is more into the fashion side of hats, and Winston is more into the preservation and historical side of hats. So where Sydney wants it to be worn at fashion events and turn it into a new hat for the ages, Winston's like, no, we need to protect it. This can't ever be duplicated, etc. And it becomes an absolute man fest of deterioration in their shop, their personal relationship. Their shop is called Otzi to Sinatra. I'll tell you why. Otzi was a Bronze Age man found in the snow 6,000 years ago. You remember the film Iceman? Was it Iceman? I showed you that little indie budget film.
Yeah, yeah.
He had a hat on. He had like a woolly hat on. They found it. He was 6,000 years old. His body was there. It's just the name of the shop. It's not really essential. And Sinatra, made famous, obviously, the fedora hat. Sinatra being obviously the fashion icon and Otzi being the historical icon. So this hat that comes into the shop, placed by this very odd, eccentric, rich, old millionaire woman, ruins their relationship. They're torn. This hat tears them apart. That's what I got.
Okay.
Might be based on some real life events. Potentially.
So, what's the point? Like, don't take that the wrong way, but what's the story here? They two friends who find hats, like hats, then open a hat store. Is the hat got magical powers, or?
I think it could be possible that the audience could be led to believe that the woman that brings the hat in, there's something ominous about it. It could be the devil tearing up a beautiful friendship.
Okay.
And the focus of interest is this extremely unique hat and what to do with it. It could be like when two businessmen come to a town that needs water, but it also has gold. What do they focus on? Do we give this town water or do we get the gold first? It could be like that, like options. Like what's the best road to take here? And what splits them is, should this be given to the public? Should it be made a fashion icon and make them millions? Or should they prize the hat and put it in a museum and look at its history? It's to show you the growth and deterioration of a friendship based on a hobby.
Okay. Anything else for me? That's a lot. You've given a lot and I'm grateful for the amount you've given.
Yes.
But full disclosure, I'm struggling with this one a little bit. So I need a little bit more time.
I love the name of the shop because I thought of it this morning.
Otzi to Sinatra.
Otzi to Sinatra. I thought that was cool.
Okay.
Think of films that are similar.
I can't think of a hat-based film to save my life.
Not hat-based, but a film where the subject matter is an object. Like Phantom Thread's a dress.
Okay.
They're obsessed with dresses. It's all dress, isn't it?
Okay.
You've got watchmaker films. You've got, you know, where an object is what you're passionate about and what you're viewing.
Okay.
A hat is the third character.
So it's not necessarily important that it's a hat. It's what the story focuses on a passion shared by two friends, and that passion, something to with that passion has caused them to look different ways.
A rise and
also
fall.
Kind of have conflicting ideals to where they want this to go. So this woman brings in a hat and it makes them change everything that they think. Why? Because it's so such.
It's never been seen before.
It's a completely new concept of hat.
Yeah.
Okay. Mate. Okay. So, in summary, we got Sydney and Winston, two childhood friends, London kids, grown up together, best buds, good pals, playing in an alley, find some mannequins with some hats on.
Mm-hmm. They both take one each.
One's a fedora, the other one's a...
bowler.
A bowler hat. They become infatuated with hats, obsessed about hats.
Yeah.
Fast forward 20 years and they open up a hat shop. Old woman comes to in-store, has a unique hat, and this hat causes conflict. One wants this hat to be like a fashion statement, and the other one wants it to be what sort of like preserved as it would be in a museum, and people come to see this hat in all its glory.
One of a kind.
So yeah. The conflict, a hat comes between the two of them.
It's an old hat, like, but it's never been seen before. There's no photos of it, no history of it.
I think, yeah. So that's what the story's focused on, really, is how two people can have the same passion, but different standpoints and different perspectives of the same passion can sometimes create tension.
Some directors are plotless, though, aren't they?
There's
look
a plot.
Look at Wes Anderson films.
There's a plot here, somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
this is...
Do not covet thy neighbour.
I see it as being a drama film. You see part of the film is these kids growing up together. You see their journey of them, their love of hats grow and evolve. And then I think the story primarily set when they're both adults and they embark on this journey together.
Mm-hmm.
In the lead roles, I see Daniel Kaluuya, who is excellent from Get Out.
Yes. Black Klansman. Judas.
And
no, he's
the,
not in Black
Judas
Klansman.
And the Black yes. Messiah. Yep. Nope. Fantastic English actor.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd set this film in England.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, you said it was set in England.
Yeah, London.
Oh,
after
yeah. So,
the
yeah, so it's
Rubble,
London.
Rubble
so,
City.
Daniel Kaluuya is a Londoner, so I think he would do great in that role. Mm-hmm. And I think his mate would be played by, and I apologise if I say this name wrong, but Sopé Dorisu, who's from Gangs of London.
I know Singh.
He's great in it. Brilliant. Similar age to Daniel Kaluuya, another Londoner, I believe. He's in a horror on Netflix, but the name eludes me. I can't remember. I think those two would work really well together. Similar age.
That's cool.
I could see them.
I'd have to look at the second one. I've not seen.
Oh, it's great. He's the best thing about Gangs of London. He feels like an up-and-coming actor that I think we're going to see a lot more from.
Is Ray Winston in Gangs of London?
No, he's not.
Wow.
I know.
They've got to watch it.
Shock. Yeah, no, it's good because Ray Winston isn't in it. Directing, I'd have someone who is, again, making a huge name for themselves in making really gritty, dramatic films, and I'd have Barry Jenkins.
Who done what?
Director of Moonlight, If Beale Street Could Talk.
I like Moonlight.
Yeah, a very good director who's only growing in power and people seem to love him. He's a fantastic director. So I'd have him directing, and the title, I was struggling, man. I've just gone with The Men of Many Hats.
Oh.
It's my worst work.
That is your worst.
But I couldn't think of anything.
Otsie to Sinatra.
But I can't call it Otsie to Sinatra.
Sydney and Winston. Otsie to Sinatra is the name of their shop. The Men of Many Hats.
Yep, that's what we're going with. The Men of Many Hats, directed by Barry Jenkins and starring Daniel Kaluuya and Sopé Duresu. Hats, 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 hats. 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 The Men of Many Hats, coming soon. Hats.